This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. The Senate Majority Leader in hot water and a female commander-in-chief. We'll talk about that on today's roundtable. I'm joined now by Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer. She joins us today from Florida. Also with us, executive editor of the Chicago Defender, Roland Martin. He joins us from the Big D, Dallas. And from the other Big D, we're joined by Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley. I thank you all for joining us. Let's get right to an issue that's making news, and certainly because of Katrina's coverage, we're seeing this below the fold, if you will, this go round, to use print vernacular, newspaper vernacular. And that is Bill Frist, the Senate Majority Leader, has been contacted by the SEC in relation to a sale of stock. His family's hospital company. He sold at its peak in June. Many people are wondering whether or not this could be, in fact, another one of those Martha Stewart situations, insider trading. Roland Martin, obviously we're not here to condemn yet Mr. Frist's investigation is ongoing, but one has to question whether or not this is going to hurt his likely bid for the nomination of the presidency in 2008.
Well, you're absolutely correct, because we are extremely sensitive in these days with regards to insider trading, as well as problems from various corporations. I mean, of course, they've thrown the CEO of Adelphia in prison, Tyco in prison, and others, MCI's former head as well. So we're very sensitive to that. At the same time, this is 2005. He will, in order to run for president in 2008, you're talking about 3 years away. And so even if this investigation goes on for 3 or 6 months, I don't think it's going to have an impact at all on him running in 2008, obviously, unless they find something.
Tara Setmeyer, let me put your strategist hat on, if you will. When dealing with clients and talking about those running for high-profile positions such as a Senate or Congress, many of these men and women are rich, quite frankly, and have to do, and you would, I bet, would do due diligence in terms of financial records and the like. How problematic is it in making sure that most folks are clean or clean up prior to going in front of the ballot?
Well, I, as a strategist, always put forth a policy of being forthright, because it will come back to haunt you if you try to hide issues like this. So what his folks did, knowing that he is raising his national profile in anticipation of an 08 presidential run, they said, listen, we know that this is something that has plagued you in the past. Back when he ran for the Senate in 1994, the issue came up. Let's get it out now, and any fallout that may come from that will be a distant memory by the time 08 comes around. What they didn't anticipate is that this would launch two federal investigations. I think that the strategists are shaking their heads saying, well, this is not quite what we anticipated, but at the same time, this is the normal process, and we don't want to jump to conclusions. We will let the Security and Exchange Commission investigate this, and if there's wrongdoing, then he should rightfully pay the price. If not, then this will be pushed aside, and then he won't have to worry about this, and any opposition in 08 will no longer be able to use this as an issue, because Bill Frist has had a rather squeaky clean image as a working heart surgeon and a senator. He made a point to go not be a part of the family business and become a heart surgeon. He never worked in any hospitals that were run by the family business, no lobbyists were allowed to contact them. So he's been aware of this potential conflict of interest, and he set up a blind trust, which is under Senate rules allowable the way it's set up. So far, it hasn't posed a problem, so we'll see what happens.
Rochelle Riley, we should note that Mr. Frist has said, and I quote, "I had no information about HCA, that's the company, or its performance that was not publicly available when I directed the trustees to sell the stock." So obviously he feels comfortable with going about all of what he had to do initially and correctly. That being said, again, I go back to what this does to voters when you see the even alleged improprieties talked about when it comes to Washington, the White House, Congress, etc. So many people have become so disillusioned when it comes to politicians. Is this just another notch in the belt?
I don't think this is going to be as minor as it appears to be now. When he did make that statement, he was correcting a statement from his spokeswoman just the previous day, who said that he had not discussed the stock sale in advance at all. And his statement was making clear that he had no information about the company or its performance that was not available to the public, which is one of those things that would cause investigators to say, well, let's see what he's talking about. I think the bigger issue is the Martha Stewart factor. We're talking about people getting a little tired of rich people doing things that wind up being things they can't do themselves, loopholes here, blind trust there. And I think because historians are pointing out that this is the first time they can recall of a congressional leader facing federal inquiries into stock sales, that it's not going to go away lightly. I think Roland makes a good point. We do see in politics a very short memory on these things, so it depends on whether this investigation goes long and whether they do decide that there was some information that he might have had that he thought the public had, but they did not.
Can a politician, Roland Martin, to use Rochelle's analogy of the Martha Stewart factor, reap the benefits that Martha Stewart seemed to after the fact, the idea that she quite frankly came out richer out of prison than she did going in? She was given two or three radio programs and television shows as she came out. This has to be seen as a bit more detrimental to a politician, is it not?
Big time. I mean, name me the last person who walked out of prison and had an opportunity to become president. It simply doesn't happen. The only person who's probably been able to pull that bad boy off is Marion Barry. That's the way it operates. And so he has to be extremely sensitive. Of course, his family has owned it. His father and his brother started the company. And so you have that as well. And of course, the public will say, well, man, wait a minute. If your father and your brother started the company, how could you not have any conversations with regard to the stock sale? But again, you know, it's 2008 is a long ways away. Mm-hmm. And I simply think that even if this goes on for 6 months and nothing significant happens or is uncovered, it'll simply blow away. It'll come up in the campaign again, but I don't think it's going to be a big time hit on him.
But people will question whether, since this appearance of a conflict of interest has been questioned for some time, why he finally decided to eliminate that appearance of a conflict of interest a month before the stock drop.
All right, and we want to again remind folks that this is only the beginning of a proposed investigation, and Mr. Frist has not been found guilty of anything, and he suggests that there are no improprieties on his part. All right, talking about the 2008 election, that brings the name Hillary Clinton to mind, and we thought it might be interesting to ask this question today as ABC is ready to premiere the highly touted Commander-in-Chief, which puts a female president in the Oval Office. And we thought it would be interesting to ask our panelists today whether or not we believe that a female, or a minority for that matter, can in fact be elected to the office of presidency. The television show, she was vice president and propelled, I believe, at the death of the president to that office. Tara Setmeyer, do you believe this country is ready to elect a female or a minority to the highest office in the land?
Well, to be honest, I would love to run that campaign. The ideal campaign for me as a conservative would be a Condi Rice Hillary Clinton 08 presidential election, which probably won't happen as far as on Condi Rice's perspective. But I think that this country is, in certain areas, a little more proactive than others. I think that in the Northeast and in California, the people may be a little more accepting of a female or a minority president. I think in the South and the Midwest, you may run into some problems. Well, we can't deny that there is still an undercurrent of racism in this country that exists. And I don't think that the country as a whole necessarily would elect a female president. Colin Powell, in all the polls, showed that he would have been elected president widespread, and he's a minority and coming from a military background. So I think we may see a minority before we see a woman. Whether that's acceptable or not, we can debate that all day long. But for me personally, as a woman who is involved in politics, I would love to see a woman elected as president in my lifetime. And, you know, we're working toward that. But I still think we have some inroads to that are challenging before that happens.
So you don't think I'd love to see Colin Powell run and have those white Republicans have to actually go in there and pull that lever or punch that ballot to see if they'd actually do it versus telling a poller. I do think we are in a position in 2005, leading 2008, to elect a woman. Clearly, when Geraldine Ferraro was the vice presidential candidate in 1984, even a number of women, a significant number, simply felt that a woman could not do the job. I certainly think so. And I must give a plug. What's interesting about the show, Commander-in-Chief, a woman president, but also a black chief of staff, Harry Lennox. So let's also see a black chief of staff happen in America. Got to get a brother plug.
Well, let me just say that whether America is ready for a woman president or not will never truly be known, because you're right, people don't speak their true minds. But I think it will only happen when there is a person who is so charismatic and so prepared and so vital in their leadership skills that people will elect them without thinking about the fact that they're a woman. As
you're right
long as
about
people
that.
Run on gender, you're not going to see that happen anytime soon.
And do you think that charisma can overtake that, though, guys? I mean, do you ever have someone so charismatic that you, in fact, in a crucial situation like voting, you don't see their gender, you don't see their
well,
race?
That's what I'm
so many people.
About. I think that's.
But
when
I'm saying,
it's
do you think
happen.
That's possible? Let's put Oprah there. Let's put Oprah there. Most people can see that she is, you know, the personification of charisma. Do you think that people would go in and her charisma, her stature would overcome whatever prejudices they have, and they could in fact pull that lever?
No. In fact, the biggest criticism that you're going to find of a woman is not going to be charisma. It is going to be public policy. It's going to be leadership. It's going to be, in many ways, the same things that we judge certain candidates on. I mean, John Edwards was hit big time saying, well, you're a cute guy, but the question is, do you have the experience? And that's why what makes Hillary Clinton or even a Condoleezza Rice such formidable candidates, because they have the experience, so therefore you can't knock them in that area because they've done the job.
Yes, and also what's important when you're electing a president is whether you feel as though they can, because commander-in-chief is an important role for the president, and people look at that, will this person be able to lead us in a national crisis, or if they need to make a decision to go to war, do they look and act presidential? And someone like Condoleezza Rice, who has the foreign policy background as Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, people look at her as an authority on those issues, because foreign policy makes a difference when you're talking about a national leader. And I agree in that when you focus on gender or on race, that will and that precludes everything else, and that will become problematic. Just a quick example, since we're talking about television programs, the show 24 was a very successful program on Fox, which featured a black president for two seasons. And the character was structured in a way that you didn't even look at him as a black president. He was presidential. And I think that something like that is an example of how we, what kind of candidate we'd have to put forth and the attitudes that people would have toward them if they're a minority or a woman.
Well, I wish I could be as optimistic as you guys. I don't think this country is ready to elect, unfortunately, a black person or a female or any other minority, I say black person, quite yet. I think back to the days of Tom Bradley, an immensely popular mayor in Los Angeles, and while this was some years ago, I don't think we've progressed much in race relations in this country, and I'll never forget watching the news one evening and seeing a white male coming out of the voting booth and being very candid and saying, I went in there with the full intention of pulling the lever for Tom Bradley, and once that curtain closed, I just couldn't do it.
You're
and
not
I don't
alone,
think we've moved much further.
Trust me. I think that while ideally people would like to believe that America is that country, again, we're a long way from being able to look past gender and race and see anything like charisma and foreign policy experience and presidential qualities.
But I'll say this real quickly. Let's put us in the position where they have to make the decision. Otherwise, it's a theoretical conversation. And so if Hillary runs, if Condoleezza Rice runs, if someone like that runs, let's put them in the position to where folks have to make the decision versus being a theoretical.
All right, I hate to do this to you because we've got less than 3 minutes, but we tried to get to this yesterday, and I want to make sure we do today. A 14-year-old student was expelled from a Christian school in Ontario, California, because her parents are lesbian. They received a letter from a school suggesting that, and this is, quote, your family does not meet the policy of admissions. It went on to say, immoral or inconsistent with a positive Christian lifestyle, such as cohabitating without marriage or in a homosexual relationship. Roland, when you hear this, and this may again speak to what we were just talking about, is this okay for a Christian private school to do?
As the husband of an ordained minister and somebody who's getting a master's in Christian communications, these are some of the most idiotic Christians I have ever heard. When Scripture says, they asked Jesus, why are you sitting with sinners? He said, because it is the sick who need a doctor, not the well. If you are a true Christian, simply allow the child to be in the school, teach and preach the values that you espouse, and do it that way. That is a sick, silly thing to suggest that we're going to expel you because your parents are lesbian, because it's not compatible with your particular policy. Uh-huh. Be a real Christian and teach and preach versus simply isolate someone. This is idiotic.
Well, sure. I would disagree, coming from someone whose mother is involved in ministry and who started a faith-based homeless program. You know, it's interesting how watered-down Christianity has become. This is not an issue of tolerance. The school clearly said that the ministry of the Ontario Christian School is to promote discipleship of Jesus Christ as defined by the Bible and consistent with historical Christianity. And a homosexual lifestyle is not consistent with historical Christianity.
Right.
Now, I understand that if this, it's up to the Christian school to set the policies they want, but my question is, why would these lesbian parents send their child to a school knowing that this is the criteria for admission? If you were an Israeli family,
we've
not send their child to Palestine.
Here.
Rochelle,
every day they're taught that homosexuality is a sin. It's constant.
All right, Rochelle, I got to get you in here quickly.
Thank you very much. I just want to say your question was whether they have the right. Every church, every private institution based on religion has the right to do what it wants. And people who look at those churches, those synagogues, those Christian centers have the right to decide whether they want to participate and be involved in places that are compassionate and tolerant or whether they want to be in places that are biased and exclusionary. And you get to choose. I think that that's part of the problem, that we want to have a one-size-fits-all religion, and it doesn't work in America where there are hundreds. So
there's nonsense. How can you
put up
this?
Guys, I unfortunately shouldn't have saved this one for last, but
yeah,
I got to stop
right.
It here. I'm sorry. Tara Rowland, Rochelle, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.